All rise. Oyez, oyez, oyez. The United States Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims is now in session. The Honorable Coral W. Peach presiding. All who have business before this court, draw near, and you shall be heard. God bless the United States and this Honorable Court. Please be seated.
Good morning. My name is Judge Peach. To my right is Judge Bartley, and to my left is Judge Toth. This morning we're hearing oral argument in the case of Alan Gumpenberger versus Robert L. Wilkie, Secretary of Veterans Affairs, docket number 17-0092. Today we will be considering the calculation of attorney's fees in the context of a veteran's VA debt invalidation. Will counsel for each party please note your appearance for the record?
Kenny Dohakis for Alan Gumpenberger.
Deborah Vernal for the Secretary of Veterans Affairs.
Joe Moyer.
Thank you. Does the appellant wish to reserve any time for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor. 5 minutes.
5 minutes? Okay, great. All right, you may begin when you're ready.
May it please the court. Your Honor, today we are here talking about, as you mentioned, agent fees. More specifically, this case is about the definition of past due benefits as articulated in 38 U.S.C. section 5904D. However, in order to identify past due benefits in this case, we must first determine the claims involved and the actual benefit awarded. And I think that's really where the main argument exists in this case. So in a withholding fee agreement, 5904D directs that fees from past due benefits are awarded on the basis of a claim. The total amount varies depending on the type of claim and the nature of the benefit awarded. And within Title 38, there are several monetary benefits that are awarded, two of which the most common are compensation and pension benefits. However, there are, as we know, many, many other benefits that are authorized within this, within the statutes. So 38 CFR 3.1P defines a claim as a request.
Is your name Dohakis?
Dohakis, yes,
Dohakis. Your whole argument in the briefs, there's a lot of appeal to it, but I'm just going to kind of give you my take up front is I can't get past Schneider, right? Which is particularly the sentence, because this is, you know, the Federal Circuit has in effect defined what past due benefits means. And Schneider, they say any compensation not paid to the claimant in a given month becomes a past due benefit. So to me, I need like a textualist, right? I think Justice Kagan said we're all textualists now. A textualist reading, right, past due benefits that would somehow get it around Schneider, right? Because otherwise it seems to pretty much end the matter right here.
Well, I think, Judge Toth, that when you consider the issue in Schneider, it was not this issue. The benefit at issue in Schneider was entitlement to compensation based on a new claim for benefits.
Sure, but it's the same statute. It's the same three words, past due benefits.
Yes, Your Honor, but the key here is what is a benefit. And in Schneider, the
I'm with you on that. Let's say, hypothetically, I agree with you. Benefit can come in a million forms. It's the past due part, right?
I see.
And so, you know, I mean, look at a dictionary. I got blacks, due, owing, or payable, right? Constituting a debt, Oxford past, gone by in time, or no longer, something of this order.
And the benefit that is past due is Mr. Graham, the claimant in this case, was assessed a debt to the VA. And they told him, you owe us $199,000 and some change.
Sure.
And so when that debt was invalidated, that became the benefit that was past due. So he owed, if I owe somebody through a contract some amount of money, it's essentially you have a...
Right, but I mean, to sort of disabstract this, right? I mean, let's say I had a stack of calendars in front of me, right? And start with what the effective date was, December 2001. Is that right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, so every month that VA paid his disability benefits, I'd mark an X, right? And I would go through 2001, 12 X's, 2, 3, 4, they'd be X'd out until what date? 2009. What's the first non-payment?
The first non-payment would be 2009.
Right.
Because that's when they assessed the, that's when they changed his status to a fugitive felon.
Right.
And
so
they
now,
stopped paying him.
Now there'd be no X's, right? And they'd
Correct.
Be accruing now a debt owed to Mr., you know, Mr. Graham that was not paid. And then the point being that It's one thing to say there's a discharge of a debt, and that's sure, that's an entitlement, fine. But the past due amount on that is only 65. It would only be those months where there's no X. I mean, that's the Snyder reading of how it, what past due means. A month where there was no, a compensation not paid to the claimant in a given month.
Yes, Your Honor, but I think the way that I read Snyder is that it's the past due benefit in that case under those facts was the compensation that he became entitled to based on his request for compensation under 1110. I think it was 1110.
Sure.
And in this case, the benefit that was won at the board was, it's kind of a hybrid benefit.
No, I get it in the sense of you have to, right, like the analogy I would use is, it's sort of like the, you know, the heavyweight belt in boxing. You win it, and then if it's called into question, or say, you know, I'll give an example, like Reggie Bush in college football won the Heisman Trophy in 2005, and then the NCAA took it away for reasons unrelated to his performance. If he were to win that, they would give him back his 2005 Heisman Trophy, right? Meaning you have to sort of win the same benefits, or at least show that whatever impediment to the benefits doesn't exist. Right, it's the same effective date.
Yes, Your Honor.
So the example, like they would give Reggie Bush this year's Heisman Trophy, they would give him back his 2005 Heisman Trophy, right?
Right, but it no longer was his when they took it away. And that I think is important to understand here. When they took away, when they assessed the overpayment, that was no longer Mr. Graham's money. It became the property of the VA, and he had to pay them back. Well, I won't get into that, but it became the property of the VA. The decision in 2013 from the board, eliminating the overpayment, invalidating the debt, gave that property back to him. Therefore, it became past due because the VA had it prior to 2013.
Well, I understand what you're saying about they had it, but they hadn't collected it yet. Right? And how does that factor into your argument?
Correct. Yes, Judge Barley. I think that the collected part is what goes back to the veteran. He's given a benefit of $199,000, but since he had already received the actual money, the physical money, for many of those years, and they hadn't recovered only the $63,000, what they give back to him is the money that they took, that they physically took away from him. And I can, it is a bit difficult to conceptualize, I think, when you're looking at tangible objects. You know, here's a $100 bill, there's a $100 bill, or some electronic transfer in this case. But I think that when you consider I really think that the benefit that Snyder is talking about, that the statute is talking about, and specifically what the regulations are talking about, is the benefit based on the claim. And the claim in this case was to invalidate the debt and to discharge the overpayment, in addition to status for as a non-fugitive felon, and then of course reimbursement for the money that the VA had already recovered from Mr. Graham.
So you point to 20.3, which talks about the defines benefits, any payment, service, commodity, function, or status, and which are you arguing that this was?
I think in this case, it's both a status, as I mentioned, as a fugitive felon. It's also a payment because Mr. Graham was entitled to a payment of sorts in two respects. And first, the entitlement to compensation from 2001 to 2009, when the VA said you're not entitled to that compensation, and then also for recoupment.
Sorry to interrupt, but VA paid him for those years. So to say that, in a sense, going forward, he's entitled to it again, is, I mean, that's a sort of a forward benefit. That's the past due part.
Yes, Your Honor. In this case, the VA restored his entitlement. They took it away, and then they said, we're giving it to you back. And that becomes a new benefit by virtue of the change in his status as a fugitive.
Right, but I mean, for instance, people can't, you can't contract with veterans, in a sense, for the payments that they will now receive in the future. All you get is the past due amount.
Yes, Your Honor.
Right? Was, I mean, effectively what you're saying, this would be kind of a creative workaround. Like, if we can get a debt discharged and payment, the hose turned back on towards your payment, you will get future benefits that you would not otherwise get.
Yes, but those future benefits are not subject to a fee. The future benefits belong to the veteran in whole. The past due is the debt that was incurred the debt that was incurred by the VA, by the veteran, to the VA. And it becomes past due because the benefit that was actually awarded, and I think we really need to consider what the benefit is and what the claim actually is. And I think that the facts within Snyder are specific to that claim, and other claims have different benefits. Whether it's a status, whether it's pension, or in this case, whether it's a debt that was erroneously.
I get it. Like, one of the difficulties when you look at 5904 is it appears to have contemplated contingency agreements only in a kind of, like the way they are in civil cases, where there's an award, a sense of damages, contract, or tort, and then you kind of apportion it, right? Whereas the contingency fee that you're talking about is something more close to, like, if you represent someone from the IRS and you get their debt reduced from A to B, you can sort of maybe contract for, like, that delta, right? Or you reduce someone's medical bills. I mean, that's sort of the contingency fee you're talking about, where you get there's a benefit, right?
I don't entirely agree with that, Your Honor, and the reason why is that in the statute 5904D, it says total amount of any past due benefits awarded on the basis of the claim. And the word basis, I think, is the important word in this context and in this case. The basis of the claim changes what the benefit is. And in most cases, we're talking about compensation benefits where the veteran establishes a new disability or an increase in disability and is entitled to an additional amount of monthly compensation to the date of claim. In this case, the basis of the claim is the debt, and the benefit derives specifically from that claim. And when the Snyder Court was talking about the basis of the claim in that case, I think we need to remember and keep in mind that they were talking about a compensation claim, and when they articulate how to determine.
You know, I'm with you on that. Honestly, I mean, I'm hung up on past due. And you're closer, but I'm not fully there with you. You know, and to me, Snyder's definition of past due is compensation that was owed and was not paid. It isn't sort of calculations retroactively, anything like that.
Yes, Your Honor. And I think in Snyder, the key word in that phrase is compensation. And that's the claim, and that forms the basis of the benefit that was won. I agree that it's difficult to kind of conceptualize what is the benefit that was won. And I think that's the big mistake that the board made in this decision. At different parts of the decision, they talk about the issue being invalidation of a debt or the propriety of a debt. But then on...
I mean, how does it work, practically speaking, right? Because normally you get a unliquidated debt, or you know, disputed debt, and someone puts into escrow and people can fight about it. And again, there's a money that you can then apportion. But here, it sounds like VA just cuts a benefits to zero, right? And then a timeline runs. And if you would have passed whatever eligibility that, right, am I wrong? Is that how it's done?
I'm not sure I understand the question.
I mean, first, you know, normally when people in debt cases, if we're in Article III court, there would be, you would try to recover by going to the district where the person lived and file a judgment against whatever assets they had in that district, right? Now, VA doesn't do that. We're not an Article III court. So they can reduce fees until they would recoup whatever it is, the overpayment, right? I mean, that's the mechanics of it.
Yes, Your Honor. And they can also, through the IRS, they can collect any taxes that are due. And they have a statutory right to do that. So, and of course, so it's slightly different. But I think to reiterate, the basis of the claim is we have to remember what the claim was in order to determine what the benefit was. And that determines whether it's past due or not. And the fact that the VA took away his right to that compensation doesn't change the fact that is not changed by the fact that he was erroneously or he was paid the money already. It becomes past due because they told him you are now entitled again to that money. And when you look at the benefits that the VA actually, the regional office, when they calculated the past due benefits in several places, they calculated it as $199,000. And I'm looking at the record at 142 and 143 and again at 150. And then you reduce that by whatever overpayment there was. The overpayment, I don't know, is a correct term, but I think it works in this situation, because Mr. Graham had already received part of that money. And so when you calculate the past due benefits, $199,000, we've already paid Mr. Graham some amount of money, and this is what is left that we have to write a check for. And so I think when you look at it from a tiered standpoint, the fees are assessed at the very beginning. You determine your past due benefits, which is some amount of money.
So I'm tracking. So, for instance, the day after the NOD, Mr. Graham files the NOD, right, he would contract with Mr. Gumpenberger for 20% and say, Mr. Gumpenberger, that day, knows someone at the RO, calls, and he clears up the entire thing, right? You're saying at that point they should submit a $40,000 bill to the VA to pay the contingency fee based, you know, because there's a sustainable debt amount that is, in a sense, discharged and the benefits are turned back on again.
Yes, Your Honor. And I have two points to that. Number one, that's what the statute says, or at least that's how we're arguing it, it says. Number two, the VA has an obligation and the right to determine whether that's a reasonable fee. And they can come back and say, well, you are due a $40,000 debt, but it's not reasonable for the amount of work that you did. You certainly gave a big benefit to Mr. Graham, but we're not going to assess that large of a fee, and maybe however the OGC wants to determine that. And I think that's really the key point in this case, because if we interpret the statute to require how the VA has interpreted it, Mr. Graham is going to have a very, very difficult time finding representation, paid representation.
Yeah, they'll try to come back in a couple of years when you've accrued a past due balance.
Exactly. And meanwhile, he's not getting paid. He relies on this money for his rent, his mortgage, his food, and it disencourages attorneys and agents from helping veterans who, a lot of times, at least in my experience, and I think when you look at a lot of these cases, you would agree that having a paid attorney helping you in these cases can shorten the time on them. As good as the service reps are, they're not. They may not be as attuned to what a warrant is or what a fugitive felon is. And so it discourages attorneys from signing on these clients because they can be a lot of work. And this was certainly a lot of work, at least from when Mr. Gumpenberger started representation. I think it was 3 years until he discharged the debt. And so I think that, again, the reasonableness aspect of the fee comes into play when you have a large fee, and it's probably not the full fee that was earned, but the statute still directs that it's on the benefit that is past due based on the basis of the claim.
Well, I am wary of kind of a knee-jerk, no, this doesn't make sense, because I think we made that mistake in Snyder, where it was a little bit of an unusual situation, you know, when the veteran was incarcerated. So I'm wary of making that same mistake here, but like Judge Toth, I'm a little bothered. Like, I'm trying to put a Snyder kind of template, not the exact facts, but kind of the think out of the box, don't look at how much the veteran actually was paid, but look at what the award encompassed and do the direct pay out of that total amount. But something about, like, placing that template over these facts doesn't, it just doesn't quite seem to fit. And I'm trying to think how we would write it if we were going to go your way. But it like, how would we write that given what Snyder says? I mean, Snyder to me, unlike Judge Toth, I think it helps you because it makes clear that your typical way of reading that statute, you know, it didn't work in Snyder. They had to go beyond the usual circumstances and fit the statute to a fairly uncommon circumstance of incarceration. And so here I'm trying to do the same thing. Like, okay, we're dealing with a an erroneous debt. And how does it, I'm just kind of having trouble, like, how would we write that? How would you define benefit, claim, basis, past due? How would we do that?
Judge Bartley, I think that the VA has already done that for us in the record when they calculated the past due benefits, and they actually labeled it past due benefits, and that issue has not been appealed. So I think that they're bound to that, I believe. But the past due benefit in this case with a debt is you calculate he became entitled to compensation starting in 2001. They took that right away. They gave it back to him. And so you calculate the amount of money that they owed him based on his status as now a non-fugitive felon entitled to compensation at whatever rate. Then it's reduced by whatever overpayment they assess based on the fact that he had already been paid that in the past. And so when the VA is calculating the past due benefit, they start with what benefit did he get, compensation in 2001 at whatever rate he was at. And then they add those up until the debt was, until he stopped receiving the money, and that becomes the basis of the claim, the benefit won, and the amount of past due benefits that are owed. I want to also point out that the Snyder Court cautioned about having a different outcome for the same veteran. And in this case, if they had recovered the entire amount of debt and say this dragged on for another 10 or 15 years, which is not unusual, unfortunately, in the system, they would have recovered even more money, and the fee would have been different. Or if they had recovered all $200,000, then the fee would have, then nobody would be arguing that Mr. Gumpenberger is entitled to a full fee of the $200,000. And so, as the Snyder Court cautioned, we can't have a system where the amount of the fee, the amount of past due benefits, rather, changes based on the particular facts of the case, based on the timing especially with regard to the same veteran. And if this decision had been rendered 1 month later, the fee would be different. The past due benefits under the VA's calculation would be different.
Well, isn't that always true? That under this is what, you know, my clerks and I were talking about, 5904, some people have been critical of, especially 5904D, because it does somewhat incentivize a lawyer to drag the case out. You know, let's be honest here. It could, if you were an unethical lawyer, which I'm sure we don't have any practicing in this court. But nevertheless, that's the way that that statute works. So it's always dependent on the amount of time. The retro or past due benefits would always be dependent on the amount of time that the case took. Let's say in your typical compensation case, right? It takes 10 years, you get 10 years of retro, and you eventually win. Get 10 years of retroactive or past due benefits. And if it takes 2 years, then you get 2 years, you know. And so there is it is going to be dependent on the time that things take.
Yes, Your Honor. It certainly does. I agree with that. But I think the Snyder Court in particular was cautioning against situations where and they talked about apportionment, and they talked about some other where the money goes to different people. And in this case, you know, if there was an apportionment to the veteran's spouse or children, then the amount would have been, I don't know what the debt would have been, but it could have been different, in which case the past due benefits would have changed. And I, unfortunately, I'm out of time.
I just added 5 minutes.
Oh. And so...
And so what were you saying that Snyder cautions against?
So Snyder really cautions against having a different outcome on the same veteran where the...
A different financial outcome.
A different financial outcome.
For the attorney. For the agent, whatever.
Essentially for the attorney, yes, because we're looking at past due benefits. And they talk specifically about, you know, if the veteran in that case in Snyder had a spouse, then the spouse could have applied for an apportionment and received the money, some or all of that money, and then the cash payment would have been affected.
But isn't that, I mean, the way I'm reading Snyder is it's a compensation case, and the fact that the veteran would have been precluded by an other law from receiving what their portion of a lump sum had no effect on how the mechanics of 5904 read vis-a-vis the agent or attorney, right? And I think the point about apportionment is there are other laws in terms of other things that may affect the calculus here that aren't sort of included. I mean, that's limited here. And I mean, your argument is that this type of discharge is sort of a different kind of case, so it shouldn't be covered under the past due.
I think, yes, Your Honor. I think it's still past due because the right was restored. And Mr. Graham became entitled to the full amount of compensation from 2001 to 2010.
How's that different from, you know, like say, you know, a veteran comes out and, you know, say there's a 5-year lag between the effective date and the service connection and the grant, right? And that's your past due amount, right? Nobody disputes that. Now you could say, okay, yes, but you're going to get all this money going forward. Right, but you can't contract for that. How is the discharge of a debt any different?
The discharge of the debt.
Right, it's okay, you get $135,000 now, the spigot turns on again. How is that different?
From just a normal compensation claim?
Yeah, that's why I'm hung up on the past due for this exact
yes,
reason.
Your Honor. And I think that what we need to, the nature of the benefit that was won, I think, is what's key here. Again, the benefit one was, it's a hybrid benefit. There were, as the regulation says, benefit or benefits on the basis, you know, what a claim, you can file a claim for. And so he got his status back as a non-fugitive felon. He got the debt discharge. And I think that when you label it as a debt, that's what causes the issue here.
Yeah.
He's entitled, once again, to compensation from 2001 to 2010 at the rate that he was, his compensation rate. That's the benefit that was won. And he also got back the money that they recouped collecting off of the erroneous debt. And so the basis of the claim is the full amount of the compensation from 2001 to 2009. And I think that when you look at the timing of everything and when you apply a certain statute, we mentioned the apportionment statute, you have a claim and a benefit that's awarded, and then you apply other statutes to see this is how much money the veteran's actually going to get. And so if you consider it in that timing, in that construct, the benefit that was won was the compensation from 2001 to 2009. Then you apply other statutes or regulations to determine how much money Mr. Graham actually gets back in his pocket. And the fee has to happen before that. And the VA does that currently with incarcerated veterans and other overpayment issues where they assess the fees before the overpayment is applied.
Let's add another 3 minutes. I'd like to ask some questions.
Yes, Your Honor.
Basically, what we have here is that Mr. Graham, who was Mr. Gumpenberger's client, was advised by VA that we have indications, you are a fugitive felon, and by operation of law, you are not entitled to whatever disability compensation you have been awarded. Now, they didn't change his disability compensation, whatever the percentage was. Is that
that's correct, yes, Your Honor.
They just said, because you're a fugitive felon, you can't collect it. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. And so they determined that period of time was 2001 to 2009. So far, so good?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. At which time they began they let Mr. Graham know that this was the case and we're going to start collection on the basis of your fugitive felon status. Mr. Graham then pursued the process through the VA to correct this. And so when he went through the process, while going through the process, the VA had already collected $65,000 of the $199,000 that they said he owed them from the period. He should not have been paid from 2001 to 2009. They had collected already $64,000. And then, so what, when Mr. Gumpenberger went to represent Mr. Graham, what was the issue?
The issue, again, was multifaceted. The big issue, obviously, is this debt that was created. But the debt was created based on several different issues: the fugitive felon status and the right to entitlement to compensation. And I think when you, as you're saying, they took away his entitlement to compensation, I think that is the correct way to articulate what the VA determined.
Let me just to clarify, the statute that resulted in Mr. Graham being considered a fugitive felon and the results, the consequences of that, 38 U.S.C. 5313 big B, capital B, a veteran who is otherwise eligible for a benefit specified in subsection C, in this case subsection C is disability compensation, a veteran who is otherwise eligible for a benefit specified in subsection C may not be paid or otherwise provided such benefit for any period during which veteran is a fugitive felon. So that didn't take away his entitlement to his disability benefit. Let's say it was 50% disability, whatever. It didn't touch that. It just said you just can't collect it.
Yes, Your Honor.
And I'm sorry, I interrupted you. You were going to say.
Well, I think that
can you add some more time?
I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought.
Yes, and I apologize for that. Let's give you some more time so we can vote. We collect five more minutes. Okay. And so what the question I had is, what was the issue that Mr. Gumpenberger and Mr. Graham went to hearing on?
So the issue, as I mentioned, was multifaceted. Status as a fugitive felon, entitlement to compensation from 2001 to 2009, and recoupment of his benefits from 2009 until the favorable decision in 2013, or at the time it was ongoing. And then there was a fourth, then invalidation of the overpayment and debt.
Okay, so it's a status, the entitlement to compensation, and the recoupment.
And yes, Your Honor.
And I just want to follow up on what Judge. So the fugitive statute, I haven't looked that closely at it, that's sort of an impediment, right, to entitlement. So when that is corrected, is it automatic? I mean, are the benefits automatically deemed turned back on, or is there other actions that an attorney has to take to sort of reestablish?
There are no other actions. Once the status is fixed, then the regional office will go back and determine how much. They will reassess what he was owed in compensation for whatever time that erroneous status was established, calculate it again based on the combined percentage that the veteran had, and then award that money to the veteran. Then the next layer comes on and says, well, we've already paid you a portion of this, so the cash that we're going to give you is X amount. And again, and when you look at the record on 150, 140, 2-3 and 150, they did just that. And there's actually a chart here that shows, looking at R150, new award, old award, and number of months, and then it says amount due signed by Mr. John Connors, I think it's John Connors, who is the supervisor in this case, as the amount due. And so the regional office is agreeing with me in some respects, saying this is what we owe him, but we've already paid him some portion of this, and so he only gets the part that he hasn't, that we took away from him.
So essentially, it's a debt collection the validity of the debt is really the issue then, because the outcome of the whole process was that Mr. Graham was determined not to have been a fugitive felon from the periods of 2001 to 2009, and therefore the $64,000 that we collected as his past due debt is going to be given back to him.
I think, Your Honor, that the validity of the debt is a sub-issue, for lack of a better term. The real issue is whether he was entitled to compensation from 2001 to 2009 based on his status as a non-fugitive felon or as a fugitive felon. The consequence of the erroneous finding was that they created a debt. But the benefit that was won was you are now no longer a fugitive felon status within our system, and we're going to award you the right to your compensation for these dates. And that's the issue, that's the benefit that stemmed from, that was the basis of his claim on appeal. Okay. Well, if there are no other questions, I want to thank this court for the time, and I'll save whatever I have for rebuttal.
Thank you.
May it please the court. Again, Deborah Bernal on behalf of the secretary, and with me today is Joan Moriarty, Deputy Chief Counsel. This case is about how to determine the amount of past due benefits awarded for purposes of calculating the total fee payable when the award in question is an invalidation of an overpayment. In appellant's December 2010 fee agreement, which is located at page 312 of the record, it says that
a fee of, quote, 20% of all past due benefits awarded to me as a result of winning my appeal is the agreed-upon fee. This language is consistent with the statutory language in 5904D and the regulatory language in 38 CFR 14636H, both of which address direct pay fee agreements. When Congress enacted Section 5904D, it permitted VA to honor direct pay fee agreements and directed the Secretary to pay the agent or attorney.
Ms. Perdell, sorry, I'm going to interrupt you. That's a sort of a segue for my question about Congress. So I asked Mr. Dorquez about sort of a textualist reading, right, the plain language of the statute. I'm going to flip and ask you kind of a purposivist reading, like, you know, if Justice Breyer were here, which is the sort of Congress's intent for the statute, right? And as I read, 5904 is Congress's intent for the VA to make it as easy as possible for veterans to have representation, right? And who better than, you know, disabled veterans whose benefits are wrongfully, right, invalidated or whatever by VA, right? Like, that's if that's the purpose of 5904, why would it not apply in this case?
Well, Your Honor, 5904D does apply in this case because the fee agreement between Mr. Klumpenberger and Mr. Graham.
Right, but you're saying because it would be limited to the past due as opposed to the, for instance, if had there been no past due, right, if somebody, an 80-year-old veteran wakes up one day and he gets a letter and it says, hey, you know, turns out everything's, the whole thing's been a sham from the beginning, whatever, invalidated back to 1960, some huge amount, right? He goes to an attorney. You're saying because there's no past due amount that he hasn't already been paid, there's nothing that an attorney or agent representing them, this veteran, can get paid?
Well, Your Honor, sort of. What I'm saying is that attorney could not be paid if their fee agreement is under 5904D, because that statute limits fees, the source of the fee, to the past due benefits, and the amount of the fee to the presumed reasonable amount of 20%. But it doesn't stop the attorney or the agent, in the case of VA, from entering a traditional fee agreement with the client. Not the nature of relief sought in all cases does not lend itself to the award of past due benefits. And in those cases, the agent or attorney could enter into a traditional fee agreement with the client. 5904D recognizes the inherent risk associated with contingency fee agreements that all attorneys will encounter. And it minimizes that risk by saying, if you enter into a fee agreement under 5904D, VA will collect the money and pay it on your behalf, but you're limited to 20% of the past due benefits, and the source has to be the past due benefits.
Right. And isn't it an agent registers the agreement up front with VA, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And so you're saying in the case of a debt, right, hypothetically, a veteran could contract with an attorney. They're saying, say, hypothetically, VA owes me $1 million, and if we can settle this for $10,000, I'll pay you this agreement. And that would be just a matter between those two in state court and not really governed by 5904.
It wouldn't be governed by 5904. 5904D recognizes, or actually, it's the regulation, 14636G2, I think, recognizes that if the fee agreement does not comply with the terms of the statute, for example, an attorney wants more than 20%, or perhaps in a case like this, there is a lesser amount of past due benefits than what appellant characterizes as the relief, then the agent and attorney is responsible for collecting the fees for representation from the claimant without assistance from VA. So 5904D really provides a way for VA to assist with attorney fee payments to minimize risk for the attorneys or agents and thereby encourage representation for veterans.
But didn't Mr. Klumpenberger actually earn roughly $200,000 for Mr. Graham? It's just that VA didn't get around to collecting it due to the services of Mr. Klumpenberger.
Well, Your Honor, he did get the entire $199,000 debt invalidated, But again, Congress has tied the attorney fee to the past due benefits. So the crux of the issue here becomes, how do we characterize what the past due benefits are in the context of recoup benefits? And the Secretary's position is that, per Snyder, the past due benefits have been defined as the unpaid compensation on the claim, so that the sum of each month's unpaid compensation would be the past due here. And that VA didn't start to, the past due benefits didn't begin to accrue until VA started on a monthly basis recouping the veterans' compensation benefits. And that process terminated with the September 2013 board decision. At that point, we had recouped $65,464.
And we, are you saying that Snyder has limited 5904D to compensation payments only?
No, Your Honor, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that in Snyder, the Federal Circuit interpreted the phrase past due benefits awarded on the basis of the claim as used in 5904D and found that any compensation not paid in a given month becomes a past due benefit. So in this case, it doesn't, as you had stated earlier, it doesn't fit exactly because this veteran had been paid all of his benefits.
Well, I said that to Mr. Dopez.
Yes. Well, it's true that the VA had paid the whole $199,000. And so the key word, of course, is unpaid. There was no unpaid compensation at the time the debt was created because all the benefits had been paid to Mr. Graham, the whole $199,000. So they didn't become past due or unpaid until VA started taking them away.
Well, didn't Snyder kind of untether the amount that the agent or attorney will receive from really any view of what the veteran is from what the veteran is owed? Like, didn't it kind of just like make up almost like a clean break between the two? Because really, I forget what the veteran's name was in Snyder, but anyway, the veteran in Snyder was really only due the 10%, and yet the Federal Circuit told us that the attorney award, the attorney or agent award, should be based on a different amount that really had nothing to do with the payment to the veteran.
Yes.
So would you say that it made a clean break between the two?
Well, Your Honor, I think it explained how the process works when there's an offset, which is something we don't have here. But as you noted, Snyder involved an incarcerated veteran. So what the Snyder court did was sort of define the 70% rating, which is what was awarded in that case, as sort of the gross amount of benefits, and the 10% as the net amount of benefits. And it said that the attorney or agent fee should be based on the gross amount because that's what the attorney, that's the relief that the attorney obtained for this that particular veteran in Snyder.
Well, I asked you the question before, like, didn't Mr. Gumpenberger earn $200,000 for Mr. Graham, regardless of what Mr. Graham, of the actual payment, $65,000 that he got back? Okay. Regardless, like under the Snyder view, isn't there a break between the two? So,
well,
you don't come to a decision on one by looking at the other.
Well,
if that makes any sense.
Your Honor, we don't think that Mr. Gumpenberger obtained an award of $200,000 for the veteran here. The veteran had been awarded the service connection for his underlying disabilities and had received the $200,000 in VA compensation benefits, absent any action from Mr. Gumpenberger. What Mr. Gumpenberger achieved for him was the invalidation of the debt. So
that VA was in the process of collecting, and without Mr. Gumpenberger's service, they would have collected.
Likely, they would have collected, although the veteran, of course, could have, you know, still prevailed without Mr. Gumpenberger, but that's not what we have here. Mr. Gumpenberger entered the case and was able to successfully invalidate the debt. And then VA had to determine what, under 5904D, pursuant to the fee agreement that Mr. Gumpenberger entered into with Mr. Graham, what was the amount of past due benefits.
Uh-huh. And what about the award letter and the characterization by VA of the $200,000, $199,000, as the award? What impact would that have here? I mean, Mr. Delquez made the point that VA actually sent him a letter saying that $199,000 or $200,000 was the award to Mr. Graham.
Well, Your Honor, $199,000 was certainly the amount of the debt that was invalidated, but the administrative decision here, which is located at page 132 of the record, is the decision that the RO made on the amount regarding the amount of attorney's fees, and it sort of explains that they initially withheld close to $40,000, which was a total of 20% of the entire debt. But then when they looked at the facts in this case and evaluated what occurred here, they determined that the past due amount was the amount that VA had collected during the period of recoupment. So there was only going to award 20% of that past due amount. So this is the sort of one administrative decision from the RO. So our position would be that he was advised.
What record? I'm looking at 135 of the record where the Hartford Regional Office says the following claims were awarded to you. This is a letter to Mr. Graham. The following claims were awarded to you. The debt of $199,000 was determined to be invalid, and that's where they give the calculation that Mr. Delquez is relying on here.
On page 135, Your Honor?
Yes.
Okay. So as it turns out, page 132 and 135 are the exact same record. So we're looking at it on 135. If you turn the page to 136, it says what we decided and why, and the RO explains that $39,000 was withheld, which represents 20% of the entire debt, but this amount did not represent the past due benefits, because the past due cash benefit was $65,464, which is the amount.
Right, and that gets to Mr. Delquez's argument about the tiers, which is, you know, you have 5904D, and that says 20%, and whenever you're calculating the award, you go with the 20% of the total, and then your other regulations and statutes that I think he called impediments to a full award to the veteran kick in. But under 5904D, that requires 20% of, like, the total award, and your other impediments that are going to reduce the amount that the veteran receives or otherwise play a part in the determination of the veteran's benefit, those are considered afterward. Like, the statute doesn't actually say, 5904, that these impediment-type rules would be applied prior to the 20% calculation. It just says make the 20% calculation.
Well, Your Honor, it says to make the 20% calculation from past due benefits awarded. So the 20% can only come from the source for the 20% is whatever is determined to be the past due benefits
awarded. I mean, but the letter says something different. The letter says this is what you got, you know, 100, the debt eliminated of I'm just rounding it to 200,000. The debt eliminated, and then it goes on to talk about, oh, this is why we have to reduce. And so those are the more impedimentary.
I want to pick up where, because I'm tracking what Judge Bartley is saying, and we're a little bit out of our depth. I mean, I'm not an accountant, and these have certain terms, but nothing in 5904 requires a kind of like a lump sum payment. right? It just is contingent, and it's contingent on a favorable ruling. So that's why I think Mr. Doka's argument has some sort of steam to it. But in a sense, in our normal cases, the compensation has an effect. You know, you have an effective date, you work it backwards, and as a sort of immediately, you have a verifiable amount, and the past due is immediately payable. So it's verifiable and immediately payable. And so, in a sense, like a debit is created on VA's books, and they have to discharge it immediately. Whereas what I think Mr. Doka, if I'm understanding his argument correctly, which is if it were sort of more creative accounting where it would be a credit, you know, a debt that would be owed to them is discharged, and that would effectively could reflect a past due amount as an accounting, and then it would be immediately payable, and it would, in all respects, under the statute at least, satisfy what would account for a past due amount. My question, what I'm getting at is in, I mean, in Schneider, like the mechanics involved exactly a lump sum payment, right? And it's very easy. You got a verifiable amount, and it's immediately payable. And the fact that the veteran was not able, for other reasons, to take his the veteran's full payment, really no effect on the mechanics of how it works. Here, it's a different type of arrangement altogether. It's not a compensation type debt.
Well, Your Honor, if you look to the statute, the implementing statute, which is 14636H. Under subsection 3, it defines past due benefits as a non-recurring payment resulting from a benefit or benefits granted on appeal. And then it goes on to discuss a lump sum.
So non-recurring would be a lump sum. Okay.
So in this case, VA recouped the benefits from the veteran on a monthly basis, $1,336 a month for 49 months. That gets us to the total of $65,464 as of September 2013, the month of the board's decision invalidating the debt. At that point, the RO implemented the board's decision and awarded the veteran $65,464 in a lump sum non-recurring payment, which our position is that's the amount of the past due benefit, and sure, that's the amount of the 20% agent fee is calculated off of.
Now, but doesn't 14.6, you were referring to 14.636H?
H? 3? Little 3?
Yeah.
Regular.
Yeah, doesn't that have two alternative definitions? Or, and I admit to not having read it super thoroughly, but I have, it means a non-recurring payment resulting from a benefit or benefits. And then it has granted, you know, by an appeal, blah, blah, blah. Or the lump sum payment that results, that represents the total amount of recurring cash payments accrued. So which are you saying applies?
Your Honor, I'm saying the first one, that in this case, because of the nature of the relief being an invalidated debt, the payment here to the veteran was a non-recurring payment resulting from the award of, on appeal, which was the invalidation of the debt. The latter, the alternative language, which discusses the lump sum payment that represents the total amount of recurring cash payments between the effective date of the award and the grant of the benefit, seems to contemplate a traditional compensation claim where there's an increased rating or something like that awarded, and then you have an effective date of the award and a date of the grant, and it's easy to calculate what the past due benefits are.
Right, but why couldn't this situation under Mr. Doquez's argument fall under the first definition, which seems pretty simple? But I'm not looking at the reg. I'm looking at a summary of the reg. Does it just say the lump sum pay? A non-recurring payment resulting from a benefit?
It says, quote, past due benefits, which is in quotes in and of itself, and then means a non-recurring payment resulting from a benefit, comma, or benefits, comma, granted on appeal.
Yeah, right, but that, we don't, no one's challenging the last phrase there.
Okay.
So it's just a non-recurring payment resulting from a benefit.
Right. So in this case, the debt was invalidated. Mr. Gumpenberger obtained that benefit for the veteran. He invalidated the debt. His status as a non his status was restored, and VA returned to Mr. Graham in the benefits that had been that had been collected during the period he had wrongfully been determined.
But didn't Snyder disconnect the payment to the veteran from the 5904D calculation? I'm not sure that. I mean, do you still see this as valid in light of Snyder? Some of the words.
That's right. Yes, Your Honor. Snyder invalidated the portion of the regulation that said that the cash payment was due to the claimant or appellant. So the amount of the cash payable is still significant and relevant. So for purposes of determining the amount of the attorney or agent fee, Snyder just addressed the amount that was actually going to be paid to the veteran and said that amount is not the correct amount to focus on for purposes of determining the attorney fees, because we have an offset statute here that is also in Snyder. There's an offset statute also implicated. So the attorney, the veteran, despite the fact that he was entitled to 70% disability rating, could not actually collect 70% disability rating. So there's the complication of the offset that's not involved in this case.
You know, I think it's tricky because normally with contingency, right, the amount the persons pay, the client, whoever, that's what sort of sets the amount of the contingent fee. And Snyder sort of took that away, that calculus away. And I think Dokas wants to, in fact, almost completely extract the veteran from the process altogether, so that a payment going forward would not, in a sense, be offset by anything. The veteran wouldn't be losing any 20%. It would just be the agency paying the attorney's fees of the veteran, right? In the case that they came after a debt and turned out to be wrong about that.
Well, Your Honor, VA is not allowed to pay attorney's fees except by statutory exception, and 5904D is that statutory exception.
Right, right.
So,
because normally you'd lump sum. 80% goes to the veteran, 20% goes to the attorney. In Snyder, it was, okay, there's extenuating circumstances, so 10% goes there, but that doesn't change the 20. Because here we would have a debt discharged, and then VA would be required to cut a check for 20%. There's no offset. The veteran doesn't get anything less. They've got their debt discharged, right?
Well, Your Honor, The statute only allows VA to pay attorney's fees out of the past due benefits. So if the court were to determine that the past due benefits were $199,000 here, then the veteran has been paid a portion already of the attorney's amount. So
But didn't Snyder kind of disconnect that? It doesn't have to come from whatever the attorney is paid. Does not seem to have to come from whatever the veteran received.
Well, Your Honor, it doesn't have to come from what the veteran receives, but it has to come from the past due benefits the veteran's entitled to. Even in Snyder, the attorney fee was tied to the 70% disability rating, and because of the apportionment there, if the veteran had, and I think that Mr. Snyder did have a spouse, but a spouse's independence could possibly, so VA still owed that whole 70% because of the veteran's disability rating. He just wasn't allowed to collect it because of his incarcerated status. But his spouse or his dependents could get that amount. And then, assuming at some point if he became non-incarcerated, he then was going to be entitled to the 70% disability rating to receive.
But not the back amount for the time when he was incarcerated.
No, not the back amount.
Yeah. And also, if he didn't have any family or dependents, I think, would you agree that the Federal Circuit's decision would have been the same? I don't recall a discussion of dependents in there, but it wasn't dependent on whether he or his family would ever see an amount of money equal to the 70 or 80% that he was entitled. There was a disconnect. From the amount that the attorney would receive.
Right. Yes, Your Honor. Snyder was really not penalizing the attorney based on the amount of money the veteran could collect due to his status as an incarcerated person, and found that what Mr. Snyder had obtained for the veteran in that case was the award of 70% disability compensation, and so that was the amount he should have been paid 20% of. But again, here, since we don't have the offset, and Mr. Graham was, you know, there's no other intervening statute that requires offset or reduction here. The 20%, we get back to sort of the straightforward, what the Federal Circuit and this Court in its underlying Snyder decision both characterize as the clear language of 5904D, which requires the award to come from past due benefits awarded.
So in Snyder, did the attorney get the 20% of the 70% which was withheld from Mr. Snyder?
Yes, Your Honor.
And even though Mr. Snyder didn't get it, the VA ended up paying out more to the attorney than Mr. Snyder actually got for his 10%.
So, Your Honor, Mr. Snyder is the attorney.
I'm sorry, I'm the veteran.
Yes, so mm-hmm. The veteran only received his 10%.
Which was less than what the attorney got.
Yes, mm-hmm. Your Honor.
A couple of questions. In the process of what Mr. Gumpenberg and his client went through, is there a point when that process is invoked that the debt collection ceases, or does the debt collection continue?
When a debt is created,
do they continue to collect
it? They do continue to collect it, unless under 3.105(i)(1), mm-hmm. if a claimant disputes the debt within the first 30 days, mm-hmm. Then VA will not initiate collection proceedings. But once mm-hmm. that period passes, mm-hmm. then the collection begins.
Do you know if that happened here?
Here it didn't happen because VA had already started collecting. Okay.
And then so the collection kept going through even through the pendency of this appeal. So at some point, it would be possible that if this thing dragged on, the collection would continue to take place, and the amount then eventually due back to Mr. Graham would have been larger than $64,000. Okay, and it might possibly have been the entire $200,000, depending on the different interruptions in that process. And then his 20%, Mr. Koppenberger's 20%, would be taken off of the entire thing in this illustration, $200,000. Okay. Now, let me go ask this question. In this case, Mr. Graham's debt was determined not to be a debt at all. Okay. Now, are there cases where there is a debt, but VA will forgive the debt or remission of indebtedness? Do they do things like that?
Yes, Your Honor. They waive it.
Okay, the waiver of the debt. And on that case, then, would it be the right thing to say that the waiver of that debt, and let's say it's $200,000, that the waiver of that debt is what you would give the attorney to 20% of?
Well, Your Honor, I'm not sure. The first step before you get to the waiver is the validity of the debt. And so here we didn't get that far because they addressed the validity of the debt and determined that it wasn't valid to begin with.
It wasn't a debt to begin with.
Right.
But if there was a case where there was determined, not this case, but another case where it was determined that the debt was legitimate, but the VA will forgive it for whatever reason, whatever that is. And then the debt, then what the veteran got was using a figure of $200,000. Then what the veteran got was $200,000. His attorney got him $200,000 because it was a debt, but forgiven.
I'm out of time. May I continue?
Oh, yes. I'm sorry. Can we, 5 more minutes. I got caught up in my own question here.
Your Honor, I think that that hypothetical is similar to the situation we have here. Whether the debt is, when if it was a $200,000 debt that VA determined was valid but was being waived for whatever reason, the statute would still only allow payment of attorney's fees from 20% of whatever is considered past due benefits in that amount. So, again, the past due benefit under Snyder would be the unpaid compensation to the veteran. So it would go back to calculating how much is unpaid in the context of benefits that have already been paid and are then being recouped.
So, correct me, I was going to give a kind of general, my understanding of how the process works, and I want you to correct, I'm going to speak very generally. So, when VA discovers an impediment, so say they find a warrant, a fugitive warrant or whatever, the first step would be stop current benefits, right? Sort of turn the spigot off. And then you say under 3.105I1, is that this would begin the sort of process of determining the validity of the debt, right?
Yes.
And that process, so and VA would allow that process would result in a board decision if there's an NOD and all that, right? And then at the culmination of that process, there would be, in a sense, a validly identified debt and amount. And is it at that point that VA would go into the district of the veteran and try to collect on the debt? Or, you know what I'm saying? I mean, it's one thing to, within your own administrative capability, sort of reduce payment, right, and let the debt, you know, let the kind of debt work up that way. It's another to go into a district and actually, you know, get a judgment and property liens and literally collect a debt in a district.
No, Your Honor, the VA would just, they wouldn't go into any district or district mm-hmm. court to do that. If the debt was created that was determined to be valid, which happened here, then VA just starts.
Use an offset. Well, they start, or something.
Right, so in this case, the veteran was had 100% disability rating, and so we started recouping his benefits at 50% per month
sure.
to start paying back the debt, you know, the $199,000. And that process continued until 49 months in, the board invalidated the debt. And it would have continued, I think, for another 100 months to reach the whole $199,000.
Right, but I just for my general understanding, let's say the debt was perfectly valid, meaning the VA was correct, and the warrant thing was never corrected, the impediment existed then and still exists today. How would VA go collect the $199,000 back?
They were essentially garnishing his service-connected benefits and taking them back at a rate of 50% per month.
Those would be the benefits of VA's and not retirement, not military retirement pay or something like that.
No, his VA disability benefits. So because the period at issue here when he was wrongfully determined to be a fugitive felon was from December 2001 to February
sure.
2009. So based on that finding, which later was determined to be erroneous, VA created the debt of $199,000. And then to collect it, they started...
So he would pay his own debt
yes,
from his own
Yes, he's still
debt.
Getting paid, Your Honor, at the rate of 100% disability. He's still getting that benefit going forward, but we're reducing it by 50% to pay back every month toward the debt.
No problem. Thanks.
If there are no further questions, the Secretary asks the Court to affirm the decision on appeal. Thank you.
I have several points, so hopefully I'll be able to get through them all. I would just like to clarify in Snyder, the veteran's name was Mr. Creekmore, and he was not, in fact, married. They talked about if he was married. And to Judge Bartley's point, the Snyder court did disconnect the payment from the fee, and that's exactly what they did. they did not invalidate any regulations, and I don't remember... in footnote 2, they specifically stated that they were not touching, as it is not properly before us, we will leave unanswered the question of section 20.609's validity, which is now 14.636. And so that regulation is still valid, and it still requires a cash payment under H1 III. So it still does require a cash payment. Going to the other portion of that regulation under H3, that the VA's definition of past due benefits once again means they define it as non-recurring payment resulting from a benefit won on appeal on the basis of a claim. The statute does not require a payment. It just requires a benefit that was awarded. The benefit became past due once the VA took away Mr. Graham's right to that benefit. And so they took it away, and it was owed to him back. And so I think the confusion is really understanding what is past due. I think it's relatively clear in the board, the VA, both kind of alluded that the benefit one was this $200,000 debt that Mr. Graham no longer had to pay. But that debt derived directly from the VA saying he was not entitled to compensation payments from 2001 to 2009. And so once they told him, you were never allowed to receive those, it became past due until Mr. Gumpenberger successfully undid the fugitive felon status.
So what would you make of the point that, like the 2080 principle, right, the kind of contingency of 2080, which is behind all of 5904, wouldn't, like you've sort of found a way around that. Because now you know, it's almost like it would function as the agency now pays attorney's fees, like English cost style and litigation, right? Meaning the veteran's not giving up 20% of anything under
yes,
what
Your
you're
Honor.
Proposing.
And I can see how it would look that way, but we have to remember that the fugitive felon status, this debt that's overhanging Mr. Graham, has repercussions outside of just whether he gets his full compensation check every month. Aside from the fact that it's creating a hardship on Mr. Graham because he relies on this money, as many of our veterans do, to pay their bills, to buy food and clothing, and to support their families. And that 100% disabled veteran presumably can't work, or if he can, he's very limited. And so from a policy perspective, we're creating a system under the VA's viewpoint where attorneys are not going to get involved. And under 3.105, you know, you can request a hearing, and that will delay the start of the withholding of future benefits until the hearing's held. But there's no final decision until after the hearing's done and the debt is reaffirmed, or rather affirmed. And so the attorneys are less likely to get involved, particularly ones that are very busy and have very limited amount of pro bono availability in their practice. They're going to be less hesitant to get involved in those cases until the debt has been assessed and the veterans' benefits have been reduced. And as Congress, when they created they changed when fees can be awarded, that was particularly one of the policy arguments that they used, was we want to get attorneys in as quickly as possible. The new law, which takes effect next year, does the same thing and actually gets attorneys involved much earlier once a decision's made, as opposed to an appeal.
Let's add 5 more minutes, please. I have a continue,
yes,
then I have a question.
The Secretary talked about a traditional fee agreement, excuse me, and it just doesn't work in this type of a case where you have a veteran who's solely dependent or majority dependent on his VA benefits. He doesn't have money to pay an attorney to represent him to invalidate a debt. And so what we end up with from a policy perspective is that we have a lot of veterans, and in Judge Toth's example, an 80-year-old veteran who's incurred a debt from the 60s, that's going to be a lot of work. There's a lot of missing records. Depending on the issue, it may require a substantial amount of work from the attorney, and that 80-year-old veteran who probably hasn't worked in 20 years and is disabled is not going to have the funds available to pay a traditional fee to an attorney. And that's why the contingency fee is allowed in the VA benefit system, and that's why the Congress set it up so that the VA can pay directly from those past due benefits.
Counsel, I'd like to ask you a question about the fee agreement itself, which can be found on page 312 of the record. And it was signed by Mr. Graham, and it says, I understand that no fee is payable upon any award of benefits that do not result in a cash benefit payable to me or my family. Could you explain what that means, that doesn't result in a cash benefit?
I honestly don't know what that means, Your Honor. That's obviously a contract between the parties. I would say that it seems to limit the amount of a fee that's available. I haven't honestly delved into that particular language of the contract, so I don't know exactly how that would impact this particular case. But I would say that that issue was not raised by the VA, and so under I think the rules of the court, and I think that they would have waived that. The board determined already that there was a valid fee agreement and he was entitled to 20% of past due benefits.
Doesn't the Skates case also prevent us from looking at those issues unless the RO or the board has first addressed them?
Yes, Your Honor. And that's what I meant. There was no determination by the board, the regional office, or the board that was an issue.
Yeah, and I guess what I was getting at is cash benefit payable. And wasn't the $64,000, could that have been deemed the cash benefit that was payable?
That is the cash payment that was paid. What was due was the compensation payments from 2001 to 2009. And the statute, again, does not require a payment occur. Rather, it requires a benefit awarded. And the VA's... The VA, again, has determined what the going to the record at 133, which I think, Your Honor, you were signing to 135. This is the fee decision. The favorable decision in this case represents the September 2013 BVA decision invalidating the debt. However, the grant of benefits does not result in a past due cash benefit in the amount of $199,000. They've inserted the word cash, which is not in the statute, and which Snyder rejected as within the statute itself. And so, once again, the VA has determined that that was the benefit that was won on appeal, and they erroneously, relying in part on their own regulation, reduced it because that was not the cash payment made. So the benefit becomes what the $199,000.
So your point is VA's statutory duties under 5904 don't matter at all as to how the parties contract. It is not affected whatsoever by how particularly the parties contract under whatever state law they contract.
No, Your Honor, it's not. The statute is automatically triggered once a benefit has been awarded, and. There is no analysis done by the VA.
Wait, so no, as in the statute doesn't, the state law doesn't matter to the statute, or no, as in the way I phrased my question, I was wrong.
No, the state law does not matter to the statute, Your Honor.
Yeah. Okay.
I just added 2 minutes, so if you have anything else.
Your Honor, I want to thank the court, and we ask that you reverse the board's decision and find that the past due benefits was the entire amount of $159,158.70. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The case will be taken under advisement, and the court will come down and greet counsel.